It's official. Defensive lineman B.J. Raji is back for another season in Green Bay. But did the Packers overpay for his services? We'll discuss the merits of keeping Raji around for the 2050 campaign right here on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We are breaking down the signing of B.J. Raji. First, just let me address this one piece of news, as you may have seen yesterday at Cheesehead TV. Effective at the end of this week, on Friday, April 3rd, I will no longer be doing editorial and writing duties at Cheesehead TV. But if you're listening to this show, perhaps you're wondering what it means for Railbird Central. The show will be continuing indefinitely on Cheesehead TV, so no change there. Still same time, same place. 8:30 a.m. Central Time, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, on the live stream platform, which you can watch on Roku if you so choose. So no change there, but just wanted to get that out of the way right off the bat. But we've got some Packers news to talk about.
Packers news of the day.
On Monday, the Green Bay Packers signed defensive lineman B.J. Raji to reportedly a one-year, $3.5 million contract plus incentives, first reported by Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network and many other outlets after that as well. If you remember, on Monday's episode of Railbird Central, the live edition of the show, news was breaking just before we came on air that the Packers had signed LaTroy Guyon, fellow defensive lineman, and we did not know yet at that point that Raji was going to sign either. That news kind of came down the pike just mere hours later. Just about, if I remember correctly, it was only about 2 hours later after the reported LaTroy Guyon signing. So Packers inking two defensive linemen in one day. Of course, we spent a majority of that episode talking about what impact Guyon signing might have on Raji. And of course, as we can see, it didn't really end up having much of a impact whatsoever. But in terms of other news that we didn't get to on Monday, the Packers also signed Guyon to the contract details here that I wanted to get to that we didn't know. 1 year, $2.75 million. So the question is, and what I want to kind of spend some time examining today, is did the Packers overpay? Pardon me. Clear my throat. The Packers doled out more money than I expected for each player. I expected LaTroy Guyon to probably get a deal on par with what he got the previous season, which was about 1 year, $1 million. I thought the offseason arrest may have affected that. I thought the potential for suspension would have affected it. But I suppose charges being dropped against him, interest by another NFL team in the form of the Seattle Seahawks, kind of pushed Guyon's price back up to maybe closer to what it was had he had before arrest or anything like that. Now, are the Packers going to end up paying him the full $2.75 million? Probably not, because if he is suspended as expected, you know, they're not going to have to pay him that full amount. So it is going to be really in essence, less than that, that the Packers do end up, you know, having to pay up front to LaTroy Guyon when things are all said and done. Likewise, I thought B.J. Raji would receive a deal probably somewhere in the realm of 1 year, $2 million. I thought that would be about half the cost of the previous season. Remember, before the 2014 season, Raji signed a 1 year, $4 million with the Packers. I thought that would be cut in half after spending a season on injured reserve and really not doing a whole lot before that. We'll get to that later. So I thought maybe the Packers overpaid here a little bit. But as I said in a blog post here at CheeseheadTV.com, I kind of threw this out there. Has Ted Thompson learned a lesson? Of course, Green Bay Packers general manager Ted Thompson is known for wanting to retain his own players, the draft and develop philosophy, sometimes almost to a fault. But if he was going to overpay to keep his own players, and I use the term overpay in a relative sense, I understand these are not blockbuster deals regardless here. They're just slightly more than I expected. But he did so, general manager Ted Thompson did so, on one-year deals. Now compare that to the recent past and what he gave to players like A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones. Those players were both given multi-year extensions by the Green Bay Packers, which they are still paying off. I think people kind of even thought at the time they were signed, like, wow, this is a lot of money to commit to some guys who really don't have a whole lot of playmaking ability. And you can kind of view it in light as, at the time, you know, Desmond Bishop had suffered that season-ending injury that kind of signaled the end of his time in Green Bay, and there was some uncertainty at the linebacker position. And maybe there's some merit to the fact that they were linebackers as opposed to defensive linemen. I'm not sure if there's any longevity concerns there with being just smaller people in general. But regardless, A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones, given multi-year deals worth millions of dollars, they end up cutting them this offseason. And those two still counting dead money against the Packers' salary cap, albeit not huge, but at least each of them, at least $1 million the Packers are going to have to count against the salary cap for both Hawk and Jones. And so kind of in retrospect, you know, not really the smartest thing to do with either player there. But now, Raji and Guyon, they're signing these guys to one-year deals, so, hey, if things don't work out, at least there's not going to be any dead money on these guys next year in 2016. And one-year deals, you can kind of look at it from the lens that it also keeps them motivated. You know, if they want to sign another contract or a multi-year contract, they're going to have to come out guns blazing and have a big season, whether it's with the Packers or not, just to raise their stock and show that they've got some ability left in the tank. And you know, these are also guys still under 30 years old. If I'm correct, their current ages are B.J. Raji is 28 and LaTroy Guyon is 27. So still kind of under that magical, you know, 30 years old mark, as you know, it's kind of in the football business, people say on the sunny side of 30, that if you're going to take a chance on guys and overpay them, why not do guys that A, are under 30, B, on a one-year deal, and C, guys who already know the system and culture in Green Bay. Both Guyon and Raji know that as well. In looking at it like that, I can live with these, what I thought was maybe overpaying a little bit. So anyway, B.J. Raji in particular, got a deal kind of on par with the contract signed by Terrence Potroast Knighton. He signed with Washington. Knighton ended up getting a deal worth about 1 year and I believe a little over $4 million. So B.J. Raji, you know, right in that territory. And again, that both these contracts, Guyon and Raji, exact precise details have not come out yet about their contract. We don't know exactly how much guaranteed money they're getting or anything like that. So, you know, still kind of waiting on that, just so you know. But still, Raji and Knighton, kind of comparable contract signed, both 1 year, both about $4 million. And, you know, I was kind of observing the Terrence Knighton situation from afar when he was a free agent for those several days there. And I was kind of surprised when he signed a 1 year deal. And, you know, Terrence Knighton is not exactly a huge pass rusher. But I do think, boy, he is maybe one of the better run-stuffing defensive linemen in the NFL. All things considered, if it was just, you know, like there were no outside factors or influences, I would probably take Terrence Knighton before I would B.J. Raji. But decisions in the NFL are not made in a vacuum. It's not like you just pick the two. You know, like Ted Thompson was, I had no clue whether he was considering signing Terrence Knighton or not. But the big thing here is, and that people have to understand, and something I've talked about many times on this show, all of a sudden you sign a guy like Terrence Knighton, an unrestricted free agent from outside the organization, that jeopardizes getting a potential compensatory draft pick. You know, the Packers guaranteed to be getting one from the Devon House departure. They're going to be getting like a fourth or fifth rounder next year because of the big contract Devon House signed. Now, all of a sudden, you sign Terrence Knighton, you're at risk of losing that. So that's why you have to understand, you know, if you're sitting there, choice between B.J. Raji, Terrence Knighton, maybe B.J. Raji isn't quite the player Terrence Knighton is, but think of it that, okay, you still get to keep Raji, you're still getting a big defensive tackle, and you're at least getting the fourth or fifth round draft pick next year for free. So, I mean, look at it through that lens, through that perspective, if you're trying to compare the two and why the Packers would, you know, pick Raji over somebody else. Now, I can certainly understand the argument that Raji's being overpaid, and I kind of believe he is. If we take a look at B.J. Raji's career arc, he kind of course, he came into the NFL as a rookie in 2009, and he peaked during the 2010 Super Bowl season. I believe he had 6.5 sacks that year. I think he even had more during the playoff stretch run to the Super Bowl. He, of course, had the pick six for a touchdown in the big NFC Championship win over the Chicago Bears. He was the freezer. B.J. Raji was playing fullback. And the Packers ended up winning Super Bowl XLV, and everything was hunky-dory, and B.J. Raji was the next Vince Wilfork, and it all went downhill from there. B.J. Raji was okay in 2011. If you remember, that was actually the season B.J. Raji was voted to the Pro Bowl, and it was probably a case where he deserved to go during 2010, the year before, and that's always how the Pro Bowl works. They go a year after they deserve it, just because it takes, you know, fans and players and everybody voting a year to catch up, practically. But he still played okay in 2011. And then comes 2012, 2013, and you know, and those were lost causes, those seasons, and the last season in particular. In 2013, BJ Raji played in all 16 games, started all 16 games, and made 17 tackles. So he had one more tackle than the number of games he started. So an average, basically, of one tackle per game. That was his contribution in 2013. He had no sacks. In fact, he had no sacks in his past two-plus seasons. And not that I expect a guy who's, you know, what is BJ Raji, 335 pounds? At least that's what, you know, I think the roster had been listing him near. Maybe he's a little bit more than that. I don't expect a nose tackle to be a big-time pass rusher. But considering in 2010, he had 6.5 sacks and another one in the playoffs, you know, I expect a little something. I expect, even if he's not getting to the quarterback, I expect he can at least be out there when the Packers are in their nickel situations and collapse the pocket a little bit. He can make things uncomfortable for opposing passers. He can make them have to scramble a little bit, rush their throws, those kind of things. So to go from 6.5 sacks to 0 sacks, that's disappointing to me. That I expected out of Ryan Pickett, who knew all along he was almost simply a run stuffer, and Ryan Pickett would maybe get one sack a season just because he played so often. But I expect a little bit more out of a player like BJ Raji, who has shown that he can do it in an NFL environment, and you know, comes as a very highly regarded first round draft choice, top 10 draft choice in the NFL. I just expected more. And that's why, it, you know, I thought, you know, BJ Raji would get less out of this contract. Now, I asked on Twitter, who do you think is more likely to be in Green Bay beyond 2015? Either LaTroy Guyon or BJ Raji, and why? Because these players both signed one-year contracts. And throw out a couple of the responses here. Who do you think will be around longer? Blair Doust on Twitter says it will depend entirely on performance in 2015, but I still think BJ has the higher upside. Max Brower on Twitter, Mad Max Down Under, says, I'd say Guyon. I just don't trust a guy who's oft injured and hasn't played at a high level in several years. Max, I'll give you the hasn't played at a high level in several years, but if we're talking about BJ Raji being off injured, by off injured you mean one injury. BJ Raji has been largely healthy the majority of his career, and certainly it looks bad. He spent the entire 2014 season on IR with the torn biceps, but prior to that, he's at least been out there and been available. I wouldn't use the term oft injured to describe him, maybe just injured. Andrew Nick on Twitter says Guyon because he seems to want it more. Samuel Shear on Twitter says Raji, I think, because he has more of a history of success. I'd love to see the old version of him come back. Brian Fonfara on Twitter says Guyon, have a feeling Raji will price himself out, perhaps meaning 2016 and beyond. So there you go. Those are just a few of the guesses about who will be in Green Bay of these two players for the long haul. And if I had to guess between the two, I would say BJ Raji, just because I think there's more talent in him. He's shown it. I'm not sure if it's still there or not, but I think there's a better chance that BJ Raji flashes, assuming he's healthy and he's motivated to maybe get back to that level while he's still relatively young, and gets it done. Could I be wrong? Absolutely. But for the time being, that's what I think. And so if we're talking about, you know, who's around for the long haul, of course it's notable that both these players, Guyon and Raji, both signed one-year contracts, meaning the Packers have not committed to that big run-stuffing tackle type for the long term. And that makes you wonder, I mean, are they still looking? How hard are they still looking for this type of player? And maybe that can kind of transition into a discussion here about the NFL draft and what the Packers will do at that situation. I think it's good in that the Packers have shored up the defensive line situation temporarily, I guess. They don't need to spend a first-round draft pick to get that big body in the middle. They don't have to reach, and they don't have to draft a guy like Jordan Phillips from Oklahoma, who I'm not sure I would spend a first-round draft choice on to play the nose tackle position. Not that I don't like Jordan Phillips, just don't like him in the first round. And so I think it's almost, I don't want to say guaranteed. I think there's a very, very good chance the Packers end up drafting either an inside linebacker or a cornerback in the first round. I think one of those two positions is very likely. You can make an argument for anyone based upon if they drop or whatever. The two guys I think the Packers would consider if they were there, of course, Danny Shelton. I love Danny Shelton. I think Danny Shelton's a top five draft pick in the NFL, personally. I love what he does. I don't think he's getting to 30, but if he were, I would take him in a heartbeat, no matter. Packers got Raji Guyon, I don't care. Danny Shelton's my dude for a long time. But another guy who could possibly drop, and again, I don't think he will, but maybe he would be Malcolm Brown of Texas. He's a little bit more of a penetrator than your big stout guy, but I do think he can do both. And I think he started to show that at Texas in his last season. He's a junior entry, but they made the switch there at coach from Mac Brown to Charlie Strong. I think Charlie Strong, of course, known as a defensive coach, but really kind of was able to motivate Malcolm Brown to really step up in his senior season and did well. And he was the type of guy who I don't think is going to put up big-time sack numbers, but we talked before about B.J. Raji not being able to collapse the pocket. I do think Malcolm Brown can do that. He's a guy who can collapse the pocket, make things uncomfortable, at least, for opposing QBs. So the Packers could possibly consider, but you know, I don't think those guys are going to be around with to begin with. So it's nice the Packers don't have to reach on a Jordan Phillips or, continuing the draft analysis here, Eddie Goldman, kind of good timing here. Florida State just had their pro day yesterday. Perhaps you saw the television coverage on ESPNU. A lot of attention simply because of Jameis Winston, the ballyhooed quarterback prospect, the troubled but talented player who's had a lot of off-field issues but still considered perhaps the number one overall draft choice this year. But it goes beyond just Jameis Winston. There was so much talent at Florida State, and you understand why they won a national championship 2 years ago. And Eddie Goldman is one of the reasons why. He's one of the top nose tackle prospects. He's behind Leonard Williams. He's behind Danny Shelton. I think he's behind Malcolm Brown. He's kind of in that next wave, maybe that second tier. And again, I don't think he's kind of like Jordan Phillips of Oklahoma. I don't think you can invest a first-round draft pick into a guy like Eddie Goldman. Not that I don't like him, but here's another guy who I think is just a run stuffer, not going to give you any pass rush. I think he's kind of one of those one-note kind of players, and I don't think you spend first-round picks on one-note players. I think you try to get better, more well-rounded when you're in the first round. When you're making that kind of investment, you're going to get a guy who can do both things. That's why I like Eric Kendricks of UCLA, because I think he's a three-down player. He can play the run and he can cover. I don't know if he's much of a pass rusher, but he's certainly not probably any worse than A.J. Hawk was. So I'll guarantee you that. Why I like several of the cornerbacks. Off-field issues are a concern, but I like P.J. Williams of Florida State and Jalen Collins of LSU. I think those guys are three-down cornerbacks. They're not just slot guys or not just perimeter guys. I think they can be out on the field all the time, and maybe Jalen Collins definitely more of a perimeter guy, but I think he's a starting type. P.J. Williams can play inside or outside. That's why I like him in the first round. But I digress here. The discussion was more about defensive linemen. I only see the Packers doing it if Danny Shelton or Malcolm Brown drops, basically. That's my thoughts on the defensive line. I don't think they invest a first rounder in a guy like Eddie Coleman, a guy like Jordan Phillips. Oh, I suppose if we're just talking defensive linemen in general, Eric Armstead of Oregon, he's a talented one. He's definitely not a nose tackle type. He's more of your 3-4 base defensive end. Now, can he kick inside when the Packers are in sub packages? Certainly. Don't think he'll be around either. But if he were to be at 30, I guess you'd have to consider that. So there's your NFL draft insight on the defensive line situation of the Green Bay Packers. But that brings us to, if I get my sound bite here,
the day ahead.
Here we just talked about the NFL draft. On tap for a Wednesday here in the world of the Green Bay Packers, the pro day circuit continues, kind of wrapping up these pro days here. There's not a whole lot of them left. But the ones that are taking place on Wednesday include dates at Miami, South Carolina, Ball State, and Florida International. And I think the one at Miami in particular will be of notice for a team like the Packers when you've got Denzel Perryman on display, the inside linebacker. Packers obviously need an inside linebacker. Denzel Perryman, I don't have him ranked in the top, among the top few. I like Eric Kendricks. I like Stephone Anthony. I like Paul Dawson. Maybe not so much the off-field stuff, but I do think he's a good player. I kind of put Denzel Perryman behind those guys. And you'd certainly consider him if the Packers do address, let's say they take a cornerback in the first round. Now you're sitting at round two, and now you got to take an inside linebacker. I would certainly consider Denzel Perryman then. I don't know if you're getting as good a player as Eric Kendricks, but your hands are tied if you address, let's say they take Jalen Collins in the first round. I certainly wouldn't mind an NFL draft in which they took Jalen Collins in the first, Denzel Perryman in the second. Anyway, Perryman on display at Miami on Wednesday, along with several other Miami prospects. Philip Dorsett, the wide receiver. Clive Walford, the tight end. Duke Johnson, the running back. Pretty good talent there. Kind of underachieved at Miami, considering all the talent they have there. A little bit disappointing, and I suppose that's why L. Golden is under fire there. Also in the Packers calendar at Cheesehead DB post up this morning, it's the deadline for the Mason Crosby kicking camp. This is for youth football players taking place in his native Georgetown, Texas. If you live in Texas or you know any youth football players around there that are specialists, deadline is today to sign up for his camp, which takes place April 11th. No April Fool's Day joke here, by the way, either. It truly is the deadline. Oh, speaking of April Fool's Day jokes, it just reminded me of last night, Greg Jennings going to have an announcement that he's going to sign with a new team. He's pumping it up on Twitter, pumping it up on social media, and ends up being just a terrible April Fool's Day joke that you could see coming a mile away. anyway, Greg Jennings, even though fake accounts had at one point pegged him to signing with the Carolina Panthers, maybe that's still in play, but nothing is official as of yet. Greg Jennings is still out on the market. I thought for a second he would be joining Jarrett Boykin as the second former Packers wide receiver to join the Carolina Panthers receiving core, but that was not to be. But anyway, that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. In fact, I got a pretty good guest announcement here. Next episode on Friday, we have joining us Aaron Rodgers' brother joining us on the show. Former NFL quarterback and former Vanderbilt quarterback Jordan Rodgers joining us. Sorry to tease you there. There's your April Fool's Day joke. But no, I am excited to have Jordan Rodgers, seriously, join us on the show. He bounced around the NFL for a little while. He's now currently mentoring quarterbacks. He is the quarterback mentor for one of the NFL draft prospects, Anthony Boone of Duke, who has a chance of being drafted this year. He's kind of been his own personal coach as he gets ready for the NFL. Excited to talk to him about that and what he's doing in his post-playing career. So talking to Jordan Rodgers and, of course, our usual first Friday of every month guest, Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. He'll be the lead-in to Jordan Rodgers. I'm always excited to talk to Scott as well. So we'll talk to you then, folks. Have a good day, as we do every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at Cheesehead TV. The Cheesehead TV draft guide is dropped. It is now instant download. I'm sorry that the pre-sale is over. You're not saving money anymore. But the good news is you go and go to the Cheesehead TV store, buy our draft guide. You can download it instantly. You don't have to wait. It's out. It's available. It's out there. So glad to make that available. So enjoy, folks. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called On the Road by the String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. Go Pack, go.